Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for today's Healthline. I'm Courtney Butts. Healthline 3 is where we like to focus on ways to live a healthier, happier, and pain-free life. We'll be taking your calls and answering your questions live in the studio today, and we'll be opening the phone lines shortly. But as a reminder, please make sure you are in a quiet room when you call with your TV turned all the way down so that we can hear your question. Our number is 318-219-4569. Don't worry, we'll have that on the screen. Today's topic is diagnosis and treatment for atrial fibrillation, which is commonly referred to as AFib. Our featured guest today to talk about this subject is Dr. Badr Al-Otaiby, a cardiac electrophysiologist at Willis-Knighton Cardiology. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just dive right in and tell me what AFib is and how that impacts an individual.
So AFib is an electrical problem of the heart, and it's, scientifically speaking, a group of cells in the upper chambers of the heart. They decide to rapidly fire and drives the heart rate to be the heart rate becomes really high and irregular. Some people feel atrial fibrillation, others don't. The reason behind this is unknown. Sometimes we find it in by accident. The most important thing is that when people have atrial fibrillation, they gotta understand that they are at a higher risk of developing a stroke. And the major or the cornerstone of managing atrial fibrillation is to try to decrease that stroke risk.
Right.
By giving anticoagulation.
Gotcha. And is that a medication that you give?
It's a blood thinner. It's a medication that we prescribe, and it decreases the stroke risk significantly.
Gotcha. Well, that's great that, you know, medical advancements, you know, can help prevent the risk of stroke, because that's something that's very common in America. So you're our cardiac electrophysiologist. It sounds like a very cool
it's fancy.
Title. Yeah. Very fancy. Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means and what you typically do in practice?
I deal with arrhythmias in general. Atrial fibrillation is one of them. It's the most common arrhythmia that we deal with. And I deal with heart devices and pacemakers, defibrillators, and people who are at higher risk of sudden cardiac death.
Gotcha. So have you always been interested in the heart and how it works?
Yeah. I've been a patient of electrophysiology myself. I've had a procedure done earlier, like a few years ago, when I was an internal medicine resident. And since that day, I was like, that's the specialty I want to do.
Right.
Here I am.
Well, and you can have such an impact because you've been there. That's awesome. Okay. Well, tell me, how common is AFib in America?
Again, it's anticipated that at least one out of four individuals above the age of 65 would be diagnosed at one point with atrial fibrillation.
I read something from the CDC that said 12 million Americans by 2030 are projected to have AFib. Just a lot of people.
If
not more.
With aging population, the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation becomes more common.
Right. So let's talk about some of the risk factors. Obviously, advanced age is maybe a risk factor. Are there any other risk factors associated with AFib?
So atrial fibrillation happens nearly without a cause, right? But it is associated with it's strongly associated with some of the risk factors. Number one of them, or the biggest risk factor, is hypertension, high blood pressure. The more the blood pressure is uncontrolled, the more likely that the person will suffer from atrial fibrillation at one point in their life. Right? The other risk factor is obstructive sleep apnea, or snoring at night. It's not the same. Snoring can happen without having obstructive sleep apnea. But you gotta get screened and treated if you have obstructive sleep apnea, because it's been proven that obstructive sleep apnea is associated with the development of atrial fibrillation. Other risk factor is being overweight, and it has been proven that once someone is diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, there are types, but one of them is paroxysmal, which is, it means it comes and goes. The atrial fibrillation comes and goes. So if they're overweight and they lose weight, atrial fibrillation episodes decrease.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I know that weight loss also can impact your blood pressure. So if you lose weight, you decrease your blood pressure, which is the number one risk factor.
Exactly.
Then, right. Okay, so if someone goes into AFib, I know it's commonly referred to, you go into AFib. So what does it mean to go in and out? Like, what does that process look like? And can you do anything to decrease your risk from, I don't know, going back into AFib?
I don't necessarily understood the question,
okay.
But when someone goes into AFib, mm-hmm. Usually that person is symptomatic, meaning mm-hmm. they know that they went into AFib. Oh, now my heart rate is irregular, or, oh, I'm fatigued now, so I must be in atrial fibrillation. The only way that you can decrease this, these episodes is, number one, by doing all the lifestyle modifications that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you can be on medications that could decrease those episodes. They're called antiarrhythmics.
Gotcha. Yeah, we can talk about some of the treatments then. So let's say someone is diagnosed with AFib. What is the first line of treatment that you like to prescribe as a doctor with these patients?
It's always about, those medications are not necessarily benign, right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually what we do is we tailor the medication or the choice of medication based on the patient. There are different type of antiarrhythmic medications that we can treat patients mm-hmm. with. Not all of them are right for one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a selection.
So it's very individualized. It's
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
We screen them for heart disease, other heart diseases before choosing one medication. Some of the medications that require the patient to be inside of the hospital
mm-hmm.
when we start them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we have a caller on the line. Debbie, what is your question for Dr. Alatebi today?
Yes, my question is, sometimes I don't feel the palpitations right off, but just my head starts sweating like it's raining. Is that one of the symptoms of AFib?
Not necessarily. It might be related to something else, but do you have atrial fibrillation?
Yes.
It could be. So sometimes what happens is that your heart rate goes higher than what you're used to. So if you're in atrial fibrillation and your heart rate is 90 beats per minute, but still irregular, that could be okay with you. But then all of a sudden it jumps to 120 or 130, and then you start experiencing these symptoms. It could be responsible, the responsible cause could be low blood pressure.
Okay. It's just odd that just my head is sweating profusely and not the rest of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but then if I sit down and check my heart rate, then that's when I find out it's running 120 or over.
I gotcha. So it's probably one of the symptoms vary in atrial fibrillation, and not everybody experiences the same thing.
Okay. Thank you so much.
My
Thank
pleasure.
You, Debbie. Yeah, thanks, Debbie, for your question. And if you had a question for Dr. Alatebi today, then please give us a call at 318-219-4569. The number is right there on your screen. We'll be taking your question. Oh, we already have another caller, Holly. Holly is on the line with us
Hello,
today.
How are you doing?
Good. What is your question?
Yes. My name is Holly, and I have a 16-year-old son, and he has very bad eye problems. He can barely see out of his right eye. It's like he has to read sideways sometimes, and he'll be 16 in June. And I'm just trying to find like the best doctor, eye doctor that we could use for glasses and everything, because he has to have certain lenses, and he has to have like, you know, front, he has to have certain lenses. And I was trying to see if there was, like, you know, what would help him best with the glassware. Would I go? He wants contacts, but I don't know about contacts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know in his left eye, he's half blind.
Gotcha. Well, Holly, unfortunately, the topic today is AFib. We're talking about AFib, and Dr. Alatabi is a cardiac electrophysiologist. So, unfortunately, I don't think we would be able to answer your question today. Thanks. All right. So, since we're talking about electrophysiology, what is the dynamic between AFib and electrophysiology? Is there, you know, a component with electrophysiology going on with the heart?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The heart pumps blood because there is electricity in it, right? You activate the muscle. The chambers of the heart, there are four chambers, two upper chambers called the atria, left and right, and two lower chambers called the ventricles, left and right. And atrial fibrillation is a commonly known as a problem of the left upper chamber, the left atrium, and it's all about electricity. It's been studied for a long period of time, and we've found a lot of the areas in the left and right upper chambers can be isolated to decrease those episodes of, and when I say isolated, I meant electrically isolated. We neutralize mm-hmm. them, and then the end result is that the episodes of atrial fibrillation would decrease.
Gotcha. Isn't the human body just so amazing?
Amazing.
That's cool. All right, we have Rose on the line. Rose, what is your question? Now we have Carol. Carol, what is your question?
My question is, I enjoy coffee, and my question is, will coffee affect the heart if you have decaffeinated? Would that be okay?
Coffee is a subject that is under investigation a lot in electrophysiology, but it's been studied, and there is an Australian study that showed coffee, not only decaffeinated, but just regular coffee, is not a big deal in terms of atrial fibrillation control. I didn't read the study in full, but hopefully in the near future we'll have a better answer for this one. But decaffeinated coffee should not be an issue because it doesn't stimulate the heart as much.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol, for your question. And maybe it just goes back to everything in moderation, too, you know?
Probably, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, if somebody is experiencing AFib symptoms and they know that maybe have, you know, racing heart or palpitations, as you mentioned earlier, shortness of breath, should they go to their primary care physician, someone like you, or to the hospital?
I think depending on if it's palpitations not associated with loss of consciousness or dizziness or shortness of breath, I think they can come to the office, and that's what I would ask people. Hey, call us urgently, mm-hmm. book an appointment, and we will see you. However, there are symptoms that are more serious and can indicate something else. Gotcha. It can indicate that the heart does not like this rhythm, which can lead to heart failure. Mm-hmm. It can indicate that the patient could not supply the heart muscle with enough blood, what we call angina, they get chest pain, mm-hmm. and it can lead to syncope. So in these kind of situations, I'd rather them go to the hospital immediately.
Gotcha. Yeah, good advice there. We have Don on the line. Don, what is your question?
Hi. I really don't want to have a question, more than a request, you might say, because this condition he's describing is very similar to something that my son experienced when he went through puberty a number of years ago. And it's very similar. He was eventually diagnosed with Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, and sounds like very similar to what you're experiencing. And I just thought a program like you, because you hear all the time of these young kids that when they reach puberty and they're playing sports, and that's when this occurred with him, they just keel over and die. And this would be a good avenue to reach out to discuss that, because the symptoms are the same, you know, and they eventually had to do an ablation. But you might save a life, you know, to discuss that with a young child.
I agree with you 100%, Don.
You know, because we didn't know, as young parents, we didn't know what was going on. You know, he just said, my heart's beating fast, I'm passing out. And initially, you know, we didn't realize the urgency in it. So you ought to devote a program to this. It might save a little kid's life.
This is a hot topic in sports and in medicine in general. Athletes and sudden cardiac death and arrhythmias in the athletes that go undiagnosed, and definitely we should visit this topic at one point.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for that perspective. Well, we have Rose back on the line. Rose, what is your question?
Hi. I had a question for the doctor. My mother had rheumatic fever when she was an infant. She had a valve malformation from it, and she kept having AFib throughout her life. Towards the end of her life, she passed away in 2023 in October. They offered to do an operation to try to get it fixed, but she refused the operation. She opted for the medication, and it wasn't enough. And my question to you is, can rheumatic or scarlet fever cause these types of AFib from, say, a valve that's not working the way it should be?
Correct, yes. Rheumatic fever. Scarlet fever, I'm not sure if it does that, but rheumatic fever affects the valves of the heart. One of those valves and that is commonly affected is the mitral valve. The mitral valve is the valve between the left upper chamber and the left lower chamber, the left atrium and the left ventricle. And if with rheumatic fever, what happens is that valve becomes so tight that it creates a lot of pressure inside of the left atrium. And with stretching of the muscle in the left atrium, electrical activity goes very, very wild in that chamber.
Now, with scarlet fever, is it almost the same, or?
I think scarlet fever is very different.
Okay. So, with scarlet fever, could be like an electrical malfunction?
No. I don't recall the condition 100%, but I think it's very different. Mm-hmm. It's not related to heart valves.
Mm. Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rose,
well,
for your question.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so since we were kind of talking, she mentioned treatment options. Tell me a little bit about the most advanced treatment options that you've seen in the last several years for AFib.
Well, I'll start from the beginning.
How to try
to divide and conquer the management of atrial fibrillation. We don't usually say we cure atrial fibrillation or we treat atrial fibrillation, but we manage atrial fibrillation, because until now we don't have a cure for this problem. Once someone has it, then they're labeled that they have atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. We try to manage it. As soon as this management goes away, they still have atrial fibrillation, just like high blood pressure. They take medications, it lowers the blood pressure, but they still have high blood pressure, right? There are cornerstones for this management strategy. Number one is stroke prevention. So we give people blood thinners to make sure, depending on how much risk they have of developing a stroke, there's different ways of calculating the risk, but we do calculate the risk. And then we decide based on studies. So that's number one, and it's the most important thing, because nothing else, if the heart function is normal with atrial fibrillation, nothing else would matter except that they have a stroke prevention. Atrial fibrillation as a problem by itself does not kill, but stroke would kill, right? So that's number one. Number two, lifestyle modification. I always try to start with that before jumping into the big gun. So weight loss, blood pressure control, obstructive sleep apnea treatment. Mm-hmm. Those are all things. Drinking alcohol, decreasing the alcohol ingestion definitely helps. These are all ways to try to manage atrial fibrillation without medications. This would help, right? Mm-hmm. And then the rate control strategy versus the rhythm control strategy, right? Some people, when they get into atrial fibrillation, they don't feel any problems. Mm-hmm. Their heart rate run in the 120s. The normal heart rate runs between 60 and 100, but they run in the 120s, 130s all the time, and they don't feel nothing. Mm. In that situation, I think the less we do, the better. We try to give them medications that are benign, mm-hmm, to decrease the heart rate.
Gotcha.
Right? Because on the long run, if you leave that 120 beats per minute go on for long, it's going to cause heart failure, and then the pumping function of the heart will go down. And then the rhythm control strategy. The rhythm control strategy is divided into two groups, right? Number one, medication. Number two, external players come in, which is me or any other electrophysiologist. Medications, we try to give the most benign medication. Sometimes we have to give bigger guns, medications with side effects that we have to manage and see the patient every now and then to make sure that their labs are okay, they're not developing side effects, their mm-hmm. ECG looks good, they're not developing any arrhythmias, because any anti-arrhythmic medication is also pro-arrhythmic. Okay? Gotcha. The other part of this one is trying to do a rhythm control with cardioversion, electrical cardioversion, or ablation. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest advancement, ablation.
Ablation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to dive into that in just a second, but we do have a question from a viewer, Dennis, on the line. What's your question? Dennis? Are you there?
Oh, that's...
One more
I
time?
I believe Denise.
Oh, Denise. So sorry. What's your question?
Yes, ma'am. I am diagnosed with COPD, and I have AFib also. Sometimes I have feelings of AFib, and sometimes I have feelings of the COPD. And I get confused on sometimes what I'm feeling. Is that normal? Or is there...
What do you feel with atrial fibrillation?
Yes, and that's what my question is.
Okay.
How can I tell the difference? Is my COPD or my AFib?
I gotcha. So I think what you will benefit more from is to make sure that your atrial fibrillation is under control. So if you have a higher heart rate, we'd like it to get lower. If that feeling goes away, then it's from atrial fibrillation. COPD by itself can cause shortness of breath at baseline. Some people will have shortness of breath with COPD whenever they just walk around. It can literally mimic atrial fibrillation symptom. But you will need a little bit of investigation, a little bit of control of atrial fibrillation to be able to know the difference. And it depends, if your pulmonologist thinks that your COPD is advanced, it might be all COPD.
Who would control it more, with the cardiologist or the pulmonologist?
Pardon me?
Who would have more control over that as a fibrillation? Either cardiologist or the pulmonologist?
It's the cardiologist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Denise, for your question. So we were talking about treatment options, mm-hmm. and I think that it's also important to reiterate that it's very individualized, you know.
Correct.
And you have so many vast treatment options, some that may have more side effects than others, and we'll dive back into that, but we do have another caller on the line. Carol, what's your question?
My question is, if you have a weak valve or a leaky valve and the apnea, do Do you take the same basic treatment that you were talking about, the weight loss, then the medication that will prevent a stroke?
Correct. Yes. You will have to have both of those.
And what is the life expectancy?
The life expectancy with atrial fibrillation? Is that your question?
Yes, and your leaky valve.
Okay.
Yes.
If the leaky valve is too severe, then it might be a contributing problem to having atrial fibrillation. Okay? Might, depending on what's the valve, what's the mechanism of that problem. The life expectancy with atrial fibrillation, I don't think there will, the moment you get the diagnosis, you have a solid answer. It all depends on the course of atrial fibrillation. If it's controlled, mm-hmm. things should be normal.
Yeah, well, thank you, Carol, for your question. And going back to treatment options, ablation, I want to know a little bit more about this, and it sounds like it's a little bit more advanced.
It is the latest advancement in atrial fibrillation, and all of the technologies actually going forward in that part of atrial fibrillation management. We're lucky here at Willis-Knighton, and we have all the technology that is available for atrial fibrillation ablation. What we do is a procedure where people, they come in, they get investigated first before being put on the table. It definitely has to be a patient who is eligible to get it. And mm-hmm. there are only two indications. Number one, if you have symptoms. Number two, if it's causing a problem, mm-hmm. like heart failure, for example, mm-hmm. or syncopal events, then we offer the ablation.
Okay. Well, Lucia, what is your question?
My question is, I want to know, is there any other option? Of course, I've already done it. Any other option besides putting the catheter in for people who have AFib, the ones that shock the heart?
Other than the ablation, the medication. Some people do not like being on medication, so we offer ablation. Other people do not like the idea of ablation, and we offer medications.
Well, thank you, Lucille, for your question. And yeah, it's, again, very individualized. It's the comfort level of the patient, and mm-hmm. depending on the diagnosis and maybe how advanced the diagnosis is, right? And the symptoms.
Correct.
Well, yeah.
Correct. When we decide on taking the patient to the electrophysiology lab and putting them on the table, we risk stratify them, and we try to understand that we're putting a positive impact on their life. So mm-hmm. it has to be, again, individualized, a good patient history, and
right.
talking to the patient, you understand their symptoms, and yeah. you wouldn't want to take a risk
right.
when there is no impact.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, real quick, Doc, tell us where we can find you, where are you located at, and do you have a phone number that maybe someone could contact to get in with your practice?
Yes, of course. This is a lot of information that I don't necessarily have in.
Well, that's okay. You're at Willis-Knighton Cardiology.
That's where you'll find me. And I have there's a website, wkcardiology.com.
Yep.
You'll find all the doctors. I'm in that page.
Okay.
So you can click on it. You'll find all the office information.
Phone number,
address, and everything.
Yeah. All that good stuff. Yeah, so it seems like a lot of people had questions for you today. And the best way is to get in at Willis-Knighton Cardiology, get an evaluation with Dr. Alatavy, and he'll take good care of you. Sounds good. Okay. Well, thank you for your time again today, Dr. Alatavy. I always walk away learning something new.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so Dr. Alatavy, cardiac electrophysiologist, and you can find him at Willis-Knighton Cardiology. And that's a wrap for today's Healthline, and we hope you have a very healthy Thursday.